All right, let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. First order of business, introduction of members. Sheriff Raymond, if you can start it.
I'm sorry, I wasn't.
Introduction of members, just your name and.
I'm Jim Raymond.
Angie Vanderwallen.
Two of us.
Matt Clark.
Michelle Gerber, I have to say one more thing. I'm speaking at the Behavioral Health Conference in an hour and a half, so I have to leave early.
Ryan Ace.
Erin Petty.
Chad Michael.
Kyle Sullivan.
BJ Olson.
Matt Rasmussen.
John Roach.
Kelly Harnish.
Kevin Kennedy.
George Bott.
All right, you received the minutes from the last meeting. Any corrections or questions? Hearing none. Those in favor approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, so we do have some guests here this afternoon. This is a public comment time. If you wish to address the committee, it's your opportunity to do so. You also have another opportunity towards the end of the meeting as well. Anybody that'd like to address the committee?
I certainly would, but I think I'm slated, so I'm not sure if that's different. This is Tracy Stride with June.
Okay.
Yeah, you're actually up next for a presentation.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was it right there or not. Okay, I can wait.
Thank you. Any others? All right, well, Tracy Stride of June Therapy Pilot Presentation.
Real quick, just brief introduction. Tracy reached out to Kyle and I about June Therapy and what they do, and so she gave us a brief presentation. And we thought that the services that they provide might be of interest to this group. Something that we've talked about is expanding telehealth type options and things in the community. These specifically target youth. And so Tracy had a lot of good programs they do, and they even have a pilot program that they offer to test that out. So we thought it would be good for Tracy to come and present to this group and see what everybody here thinks. So Tracy, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you very much for that introduction. I'm going to try. It says I can't share content unless I'm host or presenter makes you presenter.
Change that.
Tracy, I gave you presenter permissions now.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, hopefully everybody can see my screen. It should say June Online Therapy.
Yep.
Okay, great. So what we'll be talking about, June does online therapy for ages 13 to 26. As behavioral health specialists, you know all about the health crisis of defining our time. This is where I wanted to spend a little bit of time. The care challenges that impact teens in particular. There are simply not enough therapists who treat adolescents, and that results in long wait times for appointments and lack of care when it's needed. Teens and young adults are the most challenging population to serve, and we specialize in that, so it makes it more effective for them. And lastly, the longer they wait, the higher acuity and the more costly the treatment. And taken directly off your website is the U.S. Surgeon General's estimate that for every dollar you spend on mental health, approximately $7 to $12 can be saved in other social costs. So that's something we definitely agree with and are on board with. This is off. This will look awfully familiar. I pulled it off some of your websites. The two that I wanted to focus on are the goal and the fact. So one of your goals was listed to provide timely treatment to addicted and mentally ill persons to help restore them to fully and productive lives. And then the fact, this was for Benton County only, around 2,500 community members per year need behavioral health services. And that doesn't count Franklin County as well. So those are in alignment with our missions. June's mission is to improve the lives and well-being of youth, young adults, and their families by making evidence-based mental health care accessible and engaging for that population. So I'll talk about what June does provide. So we are 100% online mental health therapy for 13 to 26 year olds. It's all live sessions scheduled with a qualified therapist one-to-one. We meet weekly, twice a week, every other week, whatever the acuity demands. And it's done on a client mobile app. And I'll show you in a couple slides what that looks like. We do all evidence-based care. So we do cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, which also goes with the typical substance abuse approach as well, and mindfulness. We go out of our way to recruit for as much diversity as we can in backgrounds, and specifically those that have experience with working with young adults and teens, and all the mental health issues that crop up around that time, and others have certain specializations like substance use or disordered eating, PTSD, that can accompany that. After recruiting, we keep going. We do ongoing training to make sure that our clinicians are comfortable working with diverse identities and backgrounds, including neurodiversity, LGBTQ youth, and so on. And then they get weekly consult meetings and supervised meetings that we pay them to do that because that's their time. In addition, we provide a monthly continuing education credit courses. This is what it looks like. So on the left-hand side, this is the perspective of the client. It's like a FaceTime call on their Android phone or their iPhone. That's where therapy is done. In the middle is one of the things that makes June stand out. So in between sessions, that same client can track their mood, they can track their sleep, and then they're assigned skill building and resilience building exercises in between sessions, specifically on what they're working for. So if this youth right here is working on substance use or body image issues or things like that, they're going to get specifically assigned exercises for them to complete. And then on the right side is what the therapist sees before that appointment. They can see what their sleep, what their mood has been, and how many times they've done those skill building exercises. So they tend to start out at a higher level than had they not done any of those. For better or for worse, teens are on their phone a lot. So we're going with what is. They're super comfortable. It makes them show up, and it makes them show up with more vulnerability and trust because they have a little bit of buffer of comfort there. And often in person is not an option to arrange for transportation or the lack of ability to get out. So teens show up and it tends to work. I'll talk about recovery rates in a bit. On the clinician side, the most important thing here, I think, is that the clinical environment can be measured and tuned with data. When someone requests therapy, it's within one business day, they are matched with a therapist of their choosing and preference. They meet with that therapist for an intake to make sure it's a good fit. And then after that, they do a custom personalized plan together, and they begin regular therapy with that one, with that therapy that they chose and matched with. We do another thing that makes us unique is that we do not have rule outs. So no rule outs for suicidality, self-harm that are very common in the industry. We want to help the youth that need the most help. That includes working with bipolar, psychotic disorders, and so on. These are our recovery rates. There's two slides on this, and there's some fine print down here that I'm happy to share with you. It's an apples to apples comparison of CBT with young adults online. These are published results. What I'm going to do is send you a white paper that is much more voluminous in this. But the important thing to note is our recovery rates on clinical and severe anxiety and depression. This is based on 600 plus clients, 100 plus clinicians, and over 12,500 sessions. Another way of saying the same thing, this is the consistent reduction in symptoms for anxiety and depression, starting from severe and clinical all the way down to subclinical. This is just happens to be a 16-week snapshot. And then why partner with June? I'll skip over a lot of this because I know we're limited on time, but I'll make sure that you get the slide set. So what we offer our partners is access to therapists that ease the burden on understaffed counselors that are not very prominent in communities. which results in reduced time to care and less waitlist time. It helps to democratize access for marginalized youth as well. And I'll focus on some of these other attributes in a different slide, but we do give transparency and visibility with routine reporting that includes on budget and clinical data outcomes, similar to what I'll share with you. The impact on partnering with June on your community, you know, as well, I've been looking at your website with the community, like for every dollar you spend, you're not spending it on this other. We also do awareness and education. So in addition to the therapy, we can provide resources like webinars or print materials or the things like that to increase the understanding about mental health in your community as an additional resource that is free. How we partner. So I'll spend a little bit of time, not on this slide, but the next one. We typically partner with government agencies, affinity groups, and school districts, individual schools and universities. City of Seattle is by far our biggest government partner. And then many of these other ones are smaller, but they need a much more community support. This is June's role, and I'll get to Benton County and Franklin County's role in here as well on the next slide. But obviously, we provide the individualized therapy and the skill building and resilience building. We do optional parent check-ins. On the promotion side, we want to make this broadly available as per our partnership, whatever capacity that you need us to be. So we'll create the program collateral, any kind of social media, all the messaging that'll help get the word out about this. And then we'll do some live community presentations, orientation sessions, things like that. And then we also do program management like case coordination and that monthly and quarterly reporting. For Benton County's role, we're looking to you to connect us with the agents of the youth in your community. So looking for those that can share what June offers with youth in need. I assume that would come from the Columbia Valley Center for Recovery primarily, but sometimes it includes schools and health clinics. That's where we work a lot with City of Seattle. And you're enabling us to create those relationships where they can be the agent of the youth and give those materials, make those youth aware that they have this as a resource. I'll spend a little bit of time on this. There's three different ways that we can work together in a partnership. So the partner funded is like the City of Seattle, where we're contracted directly with them. We give them a discounted rate to pay for therapy for those who cannot afford it, or they're not covered by insurance, or they don't have enough. And we have a contract and we work our way down on that contract, billing the city directly. Grant funded is, although we serve 13 to 26, if it's grant funded, those would be for clients between 13 and 21 who qualify for financial aid. They can get free therapy, and this is on a first come, first serve basis. Qualifications would be we don't make them jump through hoops again. If they already have SNAP benefits or free lunch program or housing authority residents, they can qualify in that way. Basically, it's four times the federal poverty level. So for a family of four, that's going to be around $124,000 or below, they would qualify. The progressive funding is what was alluded to earlier. That is where we do essentially a pilot program using those grant funds. And it's sort of a try it before you buy it, get to know us and figure out how you want to do this. We can use those grant funds for those. We would use insurance, a discount if people don't qualify for, like they don't have the insurance, they don't have the ability to qualify for financial aid, but everyone would be served in that way. So discount, insurance, or financial aid, and then have a later rollout of a larger partner funded program. And then there's just two slides left, I think. This is what we serve. So it's standard outpatient therapy and what you would typically see in a teen. So by far the most common is anxiety and depression and variants of that, like OCD, things that come up and crop up in a youth. So my family's getting a divorce, I have body issues, things like that. In the probably category, this is where we would look at acuity. So if it's super acute eating disorder or substance use, that's better done in an IOP or PHP environment, and we would let you know or refer out as whatever is best. Where we're not a fit, we don't do assessments. We don't do court mandated care. They actually have to want to participate in it. We don't do full-blown addiction. That would be an acuity thing. We do substance use, but not full-blown addiction. And although we coordinate with families, it is 100% individual care. So it's not actual family therapy. Last slide on this, there are some recommendations for the program impact. This is recommended. We don't have to do it this way, but we do recommend starting out with the expectation that each youth will get 12 sessions unless there are clinical justifications for more sessions. And we can serve them for as long as needed, but clinical justification might look like self-harm threat or GAD or PHQ scores that are unusually high. We recommend limiting each client to 2 no-shows or late cancellations. That way we're not working down funds and no one's getting any benefit from that. Teens tend to be a little squirrely, so that often helps to be super clear about expectations in that way. And then lastly, allowing clients to use insurance. City of Seattle, I wish they had done it this way, but allowing clients that have insurance that is in network to use that. So we're not using grant funds, we're not using partner funds to do that, and it just spreads that out. And that was I think the fastest I've ever done that presentation, because I know I only had 10 minutes. So I hope I didn't breeze through too many, but I'm happy to answer questions. And I'll keep this up if it's necessary to go back to a slide.
Why 26?
26 is the age of cutoff for insurance. You're considered an adult past that. And that's about when young adults are finishing college these days. So we made it 26. Used to be 24 for us, but we just recently made it to 26.
So I love the thought on this on the progressive funding side, where you're going to make an effort to find out if there is insurance reimbursement, build out first before we utilize public funds available. I think that sounds great.
Yep.
Is there a way to set a monthly maximum from a public fund perspective in order to kind of minimize financial exposure while, testing the water and see what usage looks like?
We can put all sorts of controls in place to do that. It really just depends on what your budget is, how you wish this to go. So we give you ongoing budget in any regard, even if it's grant funded. We'll let you know in a report, this is how many we've seen, this is the pace that we've seen it. It's a little bit different in therapy. So you might go once a week to therapy. I might need twice a week, and someone else might need every other week. So it's a little bit difficult to control how many sessions and how often, but we can certainly put those controls in place for you.
And then do you have any estimates from similar communities to ours on what that mix of insurance or Medicaid payment versus a public funding in order to underwrite the cost of care?
I don't yet, because City of Seattle skipped the pilot program and went directly in with us. And that went so well that we are now on a contract extension and working on a third contract extension. So I can share, potential demographics and things like that. We are working with other cities that want to do the try it before you buy it approach, the progressive funding, but they're not in it yet. So I don't have any data to share with you yet on that.
And Tracy, do you have any data on the attrition to keeping appointments using telehealth versus face-to-face?
I don't have any data on that personally, but I bet that exists. I can get back to you on what that might look like. We find that if a youth doesn't have to arrange for a ride, they tend to show up more. They most of the time have that hand in their phone, in their hand or in their pocket. So a therapy session is literally in their hand, and it makes it easier, but I'll get that data for you.
Your response rates seem a bit high. How do you measure response rate?
Recovery rate, you mean?
Correct.
I'll share the white paper with you that it's several pages long and talks about how we gathered that data against all the clients of all time. So I'm happy to share that with you.
Be great.
I'm taking notes over here, so I'm just added that to my note. They are honestly that high, though. We're super proud of that.
Have you given this presentation to the Greater Columbia Behavioral Health?
Not yet. We started with Matt and Kyle.
Are you intending on doing that?
I don't have direct context in there. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments for our guests?
Well, thank you, Tracy, for the presentation. If you can send over the other information that you said you'd have, and then the slide deck, I can distribute that to the group here, and we can have some further conversations on if that's something we want to recommend. That this group then makes recommendations to the two boards of county commissioners on what they think they should spend those public dollars on. And so I think we'll have to have some more discussion and some more chance for the group to digest the information you provide. So I appreciate you taking the time to do the presentation today.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I hope to hear from you all soon. Matt and Kyle, I'll send you all the items that I mentioned.
Okay, sounds great.
Bye, everyone.
All right, on to the next order of business. Matt has an update on the Columbia Valley Center for Recovery. So, you know, I messed that up on the radio interview. I was like,
I mess it up all the time. It doesn't roll off the tongue.
We'll get it.
Well, I always want to flip Center for Recovery and Recovery. That's hard for me.
I do. I say CBC. Yeah. CBC for Recovery. That has helped me.
Okay.
CBC for Recovery. Not to be confused with the pharmacy. All right.
That's what we ran into, is everybody already had the good acronyms. Obviously we completed the validation phase of the project. I think we talked about that last week. We received that validation report from Boughton Construction that was presented to our commissioners on June 4th. And so it is now published on our website for all to see. If you want to go look at it, it's 200 odd pages. But there's a lot of good information there in the beginning of that they've taken and compiled as we work through the process, and how some of the decisions that they recommended or came to, as far as which site to use and which area of the building to use. And so I would encourage everyone to go and get that, take a look at least the first part of it. The back end of it is a lot of just backup data and things, but you're happy to browse through it. If you go on the Benton County website, scroll down to the bottom, there's a link that says Columbia Valley Center for Recovery. You click on that, there's a picture there, kind of the floor plan. If you click on that picture, that opens up that document. So please feel free to take a look at that. If you have questions or anything like that, I can do my best to answer those, or I can definitely get the construction team to answer any questions. With that being completed, what they're moving into now is the schematic design phase. And so they're having regular meetings with Comprehensive as the operator and the county, and starting to really drill down from a programmatic diagram to an actual floor plan. So we had originally the programmatic diagram, they had the programs arranged one way. And as they've started to go into that a little more, they're already, you can see they're shifting positions within the buildings to do what makes more sense, trying to make as much utilization of the existing layout as possible. So minimizing demolition, minimizing new walls and new things to speed up construction and keep the cost as low as possible. So we don't have final positions for anything yet. I think they're getting closer to where they would say, hey, we're comfortable that this is where we want to be. But part of that also means that once they've developed an option, they have to go back and cost that option and make sure that it still fits within the budget that we've given them to build that out. So that effort is expected to wrap up in August. That's when they expect to have the preliminary design done. That's when we would be settled down on, okay, it's the floor plan is going to look pretty close to this. And then they would progress from there into the design, the final design phase. Our hope is that simultaneously, the city of Kennewick will give us some permits to start demolition and maybe some mechanical construction, so that as we're working through that design phase, we can also be beginning the construction phase at the same time. So right now we are still on track for the project schedule that we have, that we presented last time. So still, unfortunately, December of 2025, I know it feels like a long way out, but there is a lot of work to do. And I think some people got to have a tour. Again, we had a group yesterday go through there, and you can, when you really start to look at you know, all the anti-ligature that needs to be added and the mechanical systems that need to be replaced and the windows and everything needing to be replaced and the exterior repairs that need to be done, you can get an idea of why it may take longer. It isn't, unfortunately, just painting some walls and putting some flooring in. We would love it to be that, but that's not what it is. And so we are continuing to work with Mountain and their team and encouraging them as anywhere they can find to shave schedule and do that. And if there's opportunities to progress one area over the other three, or we would do that as well. But right now, they haven't identified any areas where there'd be significant cost or time savings. They're working on the cost savings piece, but still, that's part of the project as we go through is they are carrying a little bit of what we call contingency. So that's money that they haven't identified to a specific area. And as we drill down on that design and we get into that first part of construction and, you know, they're making sure we have discovered every unknown surprise that we're going to discover, that contingency piece will start to shift into the actual project. And so we'll be able to gain some things as we go. So we have a list that we're carrying called betterments, and you'll see those if you review the report. And so we'll go through that list as we shave that contingency down and they shrink that, those betterments on that list will get added into the project. So we keep that money going into the facility. It doesn't just disappear from the budget. We buy new things that want it that couldn't initially afford. So yeah, I'd encourage anyone to take a look at that thing. And right now, we're not seeing any barriers to success or progress. We're on track. They seem to be very comfortable with that. So happy to answer any questions anybody has.
Questions?
Good news.
That included time spent.
I mean, the timeline, yeah, I kind of hinted at that for the timeline. The one thing that is tied to the construction timeline, so we're still on track for that, is this kind of finalizing that contract with Comprehensive. And so once we get through that preliminary design and we're all comfortable that the floor plan is probably going to be that, that's when we can go back with Comprehensive and really now start to drill down. Okay, we know what the facility is going to look like. That will help them build their staff model so that we can really get that final negotiation done on that contract. So we're still waiting on that. We're getting closer.
So have you, I'll use the Pasco overpass bridge as an example. They're like a year and a half late and $4 million over budget. Do you have a sense of that?
No, I think Mountain is very confident that they can deliver this project at the time, and they don't want, I think that there's enough contingency in that. So in that contract, I mean, we would have to find something just astronomically different than what we've already done. And they have been in there. They've done some selective demolition already. You know, if they had questions on the roof, we've pulled down all of the roof. I mean, people, all the roofing tiles are gone, so they can see all the utilities. They've been and inspected and looked at all of the HVAC systems. They know where the broken pipes are. They know where the damage and the structural issues are. So they are pretty confident that we're not going to find any major surprises. It's an old hospital that's been remodeled millions of times. There's going to be small surprises, but they don't expect there's going to be anything serious that would jeopardize that schedule.
And have you been able to secure the actual vandalism and all that? Or it's got to stop?
We occasionally get people who still try to break in, but so far they haven't been successful. They've busted some holes in the stucco trying to get the wood off the windows and things like that, but they're not getting in the facility anymore. But yeah, they're still trying. It hasn't stopped.
So I know there's two costs we're all kind of waiting for. One is the construction side, which is coming in August, it sounds like.
Right. And that validation report does have a budget in it.
Yes, so I saw that.
And so the nice thing is we'll get that final cost, but we expect that to be pretty
at that point too. Okay. Yeah. So then the second piece is that operational piece, right? Right. What is going to be the mix of, you know, insurance, private pay versus subsidized by the counties?
Right.
What is the timeline? Is there more clarity on the timeline for that? That's kind of the piece I think many of us are waiting for.
And that really is driven by that, having that floor plan to develop a staffing model. So we expect that we should have that nailed down to the point that we're all comfortable that this is not going to change, not change significantly. And then we would be doing that negotiation with Comprehensive and finishing that.
Maybe end of 2024, December 2024?
Yeah, I would like to see it before that. Okay. Sometime in that
in the end of the third quarter or right at the beginning of the fourth quarter, I'd like to finalize that.
Okay.
But I know they want to get going on some of the starter costs and get going on staffing and getting equipment and all those things, because we want to be ready to go. We don't want a done facility and then have it sit empty for months while we figure that part out. So. But yeah, I know we're waiting on that. I would love to see all of that too, but at the same time, I want to make sure that we give a good number. I don't want to come back and say, oh, it's going to cost me.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments?
And anybody who wants, will, anybody wants to go take a look? I think, you know, the tour, maybe most people have been there at some point, but as we start into construction, I definitely want to make sure people have know that anytime we want to go take a look and walk through as the construction's progressing, let's make sure that we'll arrange that. We may even just arrange regular dates during the month for everybody to kind of walk through. So,
well, Mike Gonzalez isn't here, but you know, the last couple of meetings he's brought, at least a couple of times, has brought up questions that he's gotten from Franklin County citizens and you know, maybe others about the money sitting in the bank. And you know, is there a way that that can start to be deployed in a way that meets the mission and is aligned with the purpose? And I mean, I know, you know, we've been looking at some of that with the sobering services, but it seems like maybe, and I only briefly reviewed that veterans list, but it could be worth thinking about from a Franklin County perspective and that pool of funds to look at, you know, the gymnasium or the commercial kitchen or, you know, one of the, or more of those items that is out of budget reach from the current CapEx raise that's happened, but could be folded in potentially with some of those dollars.
You have to read the RCWs and the money that's being collected by RCWs, and you have to make sure that you're following what those RCWs say that that money can be used for. And brick and mortar is one of them.
Actually, they changed that last year.
Yeah.
So you'd have to look.
Yeah.
And then go from there.
Because we are going to, Benton County is going to end up dedicating a significant portion of what we've collected to this project to make sure that it is fully funded. So that's what our dollars are going to go to. We have grant dollars that have timelines on them, so we're going to spend those first. So that probably will be the last money in. So, but that's our intention is to use a good portion of that fund balance that we have right now to pay that. Obviously, keeping in mind that we need to retain a decent sized balance to make sure we can pay for the services contract to go. So yeah, we'll see ours continue to grow, but we're making sure everybody understands that we expect to spend several million dollars of that to this project. It just won't be until probably the tail end because we want to make sure we spend our grant dollars with definite end dates first. But I think, I mean, that's always a good conversation to have. It's ultimately up to the Franklin County Commissioners if they wanted to do that. I know the Recovery Coalition is working very hard on some of those betterments lists that they have. And so,
I mean, I know that, you know, to share Raymond's point that, and I remember talking about it at a meeting, you know, some time ago that ruling had changed and that the tax revenue could be now used for CapEx, but, you know, is it worth making a motion to, I don't even know what the motion would be, just to suggest that the committee ensure that the Franklin County Commissioners are aware of that change and that flexibility with those funding exists and could be potentially utilized for that purpose?
So John, the 26th, I think it is of this month, the voting board going to meet with the Franklin County Commissioners and give the presentation, and that time you'll be free to ask.
Cool.
How's voting?
Well, I won't be here on the 26th, but I'll talk, make sure that those who will be here or who will be there, you know, have that message. I think it's just worth knowing. I think that was because that was an article of faith 2 or 3 years ago, whenever we kicked this off, the distinction in those pools of money. But I think that shift is meaningful, especially
until you do services. Do you start implementing services and then you spend the money?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a balance, right? You're under political pressure to deploy some of it now and not just have it sit there. You don't really know what the monthly recurring cost is going to be once services get started. So you don't want to spend all that money all at once, so you have an empty coffer once you start beginning services. So is there a balance there? I think Franklin County has $8 million or something sitting there now. You know, and if some of that could be deployed now in a way that conveyed to the community, hey, we're being good stewards of this money, we're contributing to the construction of the building and in a cool way, and we're setting ourselves up to be ready for when the operations start. You know, maybe there's a way to touch all those bases possible.
Set questions. And like I said, once you take a look at the report, everybody here has my email. Feel free to email me. I'm just happy to share my phone number if you want to chat on the phone about questions you have there. So everybody gets a chance to see what's going on.
So BJ?
Yes.
And Matt, would you guys make sure this presentation was given that it gets to Cindy Saunders so Cindy Saunders yep. can get it to the commission?
Talk about the June therapy.
Yeah. And Cameron, you're tied in there too, so we can make sure you get it. Guys,
any other questions or comments? Thank you, Matt. Moving on to the next item of business, we have an update on the field responder teams. Chad, you have a
Thanks, BJ. So there are two documents that went out to the group. One is a comprehensive health care's response to the RFP. Everybody should have received that. And then in addition to that, you should have also gotten a document that is the title is Field Response Team Subgroup Meeting 4/29/2024 Key Points and Questions. So if you haven't had a chance to look through it, I'd encourage you to do that at your convenience. We won't go through all the RFP today, but we did have a meeting a couple weeks ago with Courtney. Our subgroup met collectively, and we came up with what our questions were that we would have for them. That's the key points and the questions. Couple key points that we thought we would go over, and you know, would invite you to jump in if you think we're missing something or misconstruing something. We walked through the work schedule. Courtney offered out a couple of different work schedules, and we got some clarity on that. They just want to make sure that they have good coverage 7 days a week. That's what she was proposing. Sounded really good. One of the things that we shared with her was the program rollout. So the program, where we would envision the program to be long term, will probably take a little bit of time. Specifically, we've talked kind of a little longer term vision on maybe at some point in time they have MDTs, actually mobile data terminals in their car, where they'd be able to get calls for service and those sort of things. That probably wouldn't happen immediately. We've got Kim from dispatch that's in the group, and then at some point when we get ready to roll this out, assuming that the commissioners all agree to move forward with the contract, really bringing a subgroup together that would need to consist of our medical program director, Dr. Hodges, who's a medical program director for both Benton and Franklin County, law enforcement, fire, and then our subgroup to continue to flesh this out a little bit more for this. But rolling back, there's many, many different things that need to be looked at when we look at the MDT specifically and some of the information. There's some very protected information, so we would really need to look at how do we protect that information, who has access to it. So starting maybe a little bit more basic with cell phones, some of those sort of things. So we were pretty clear with Courtney where the program would start, would not ultimately be where we would like to see it in. And it seems like we have a opportunity to kind of build this out as we want to. Talked about office space, they are assured that they already have space in a building behind Applebee's. So that was not embedded in the costs here. That's because they've already anticipated that. Cost questions came up. We wanted to make sure that we were looking at what are they building for. So we would envision some of these positions would probably be a little bit transitory, may not be filled all the time. So the response that we got back was that they would only build for actuals. So whatever positions actually that they had filled, that's what we would get billed for. Talked about the length of the contract. That probably would be a good idea, maybe to start with a 1 year, kind of feel it out, see how it goes, get some sense of how's the program working, do we need to make changes, and then build out into a more multi-year. Courtney brought up, I think, a very valid point that when you're hiring people, that becomes a little bit challenging in the sense that their question is, do I have a job after this? So after that first year, we can appreciate that. But I think if we shared with her, and it's not our contract, it would be from the two counties, maybe some assurances that if it is successful, there's a high probability that it is going to be a multi-year contract. we don't, certainly don't see the need going away. We talked about the training that would need to be included would be, there's a number of different things that, would need to be there. Mental health, first aid, CPR would be a couple of those things that would need to be included for the team that would be working on it. And then a fair bit of dialogue about reporting requirements. So what data would we expect to get? And we gave Courtney just a kind of a handful of ideas of what those things might be that we would want to see included. So that, I think, a good conversation. Erin would invite you to jump in if you think that I missed anything.
Don't think you did.
Okay. Angie, anything? Yeah, of course. And Courtney, of course, anything that you would add?
Got it.
Okay. Yeah, so Matt, our recommendation would be, we think it's an important program. I think this was definitely in our top list of 8 items that we all, when at the front end of this journey, talked about. So we would encourage moving forward with getting a draft contract setting and set up, sharing that with both the commissioners and our group would certainly be happy to help provide some input in that. And be happy to field any questions from.
Is that a motion?
I will make a formal motion unless there's, well, maybe I should make a motion.
Then we can discuss the question.
Yeah, so make a motion to move forward with putting together a draft contract.
Is there a second?
I second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussions or questions?
So a question on that for a layman like me that knows nothing.
Yeah.
So is there a 2-minute quick answer to how this interfaces with the other similar programs that we continue to hear talked about that are funded in different ways?
And yes.
What that alignment looks like? Is there duplication of services? What holes does this fill? Like, is there a 2-minute version? There may not be.
Those are great questions, Brian. And I really wish Cindy was here because Cindy, out of our group, probably has the best feel for all of what connects to what. That's been probably a frustration of mine as we've gone through this journey of just really not having a good clear picture of how is everything connected and are we duplicating services. So this is different. Courtney, I don't know if maybe you might feel a little bit better than I about talking about how this might be different than the services that you're currently offering that are similar but different to this one.
Yeah, I can talk about relationships that I'm sure Cameron can help outside of us, but we just kind of see this as an adjunct. We provide the 24/7 crisis response in Franklin County, but this could be targeted to first responder calls. And so what we're essentially doing is peeling off those calls from the current crisis team and funneling them towards this team for a community response. And then only if it requires a higher level of response by a DCR, then we can, our staff team can call in that team. So it's actually kind of helping to peel off some things and allowing response times to be quicker for all of our teams involved. And then we had originally in our proposal a suggestion to consider like a care coordinator position. And we talked about that in our meeting and Cindy talked about how there are other positions within the community that this field responder team could connect with, kind of warm hand up. But it's just something that we might want to look at in terms of if we're finding a hard time getting people linked quickly, that a care coordinator could help with linkage to other resources.
Question, Courtney. Like, if you were to put it into a short statement, would it be serious but not detainable?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell.
Sure. But I mean, like that category.
Yeah, so dispatch is going to get a call. They're going to work through their call procedures and make a decision about is this something that this team can respond to alone or in coordination with law enforcement or EMS?
Yeah.
And at that time, the emergency level might not quite be known, but.
Just from a public standpoint, I'm like, if you just said what you just said to the public, their eyes would glass over. So,
I'll work on that.
no offense. Like, I get what you're saying. Totally get what you're saying. So, serious enough to have a response, but maybe not necessary to detain them.
Yeah, and I'm not in charge of the community at large knows what detention is, but it's just that notion that we're trying to alleviate first responders from responding to be here at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. which was really the goal when we started that solidarity, was to get that floating on the current EMS. So hopefully we can figure out what calls are we not going to, and that we like it's safety issues. We've talked through that, but hopefully we can get a little bit more comfortable that there's some tools in place that we don't have to err on the side of let's send everybody in.
I would also imagine that it would increase your response times for people who do need to be detained.
Yes. And kind of telling off that later, that team.
Question. So I was at the commissioner's meeting this week, and emergency services presented on the status of all the communications and whatnot. Is adding the mobile response team to those networks, is that going to affect that in any way?
For the communications piece?
Yeah.
I wouldn't think so initially. In fact, we're not envisioning that they would have a radio initially. It would really be a cell phone. And then eventually we would probably get to the point they might have an MDT and the radio. Even if they had the radio, though, I wouldn't think that would overwhelm the system. You know, talking about a couple of people talking on the radio, which would not, that'd be a big deal.
And those calls are already going to dispatch anyway.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
There are CDIS requirements, though.
Yeah.
If you're going to do an MDT, it's easier to get the CDIS requirements covered through the firefighters, not the phone.
Yeah.
And someone's got to pay for the calls. A little bit more.
Yep.
Which is why we start with cell phones, figure out the other pieces.
Right.
So just to clarify from a cost perspective, this is a by-county cost estimate, is that correct?
By county.
Both Benton and.
Yes.
Yes, okay, great.
Any other discussion or questions?
Sorry, one more, just reminding, current sales tax collection or 1/10 collection is approximately X per year.
Oh, it's Benton County, it's averaging around 400,000 a month. So
maybe do math, but that's good.
Yeah, it's
we're talking about probably 10% of total between both counties.
Franklin County is probably what, 200,000 a month?
Yeah, last time I looked at it, it's been a while, it was like 230,000 a month.
Okay, so it's called 10%. Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, the want to state the motion, or maybe you could state what you've typed over there.
If you have a motion to for putting together a draft contract.
Okay, we're voting on the draft contract for the RFP. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Nice job,
yes,
Mike, yeah. Your committee for sticking with that.
Thank you. So a number of people that aren't here, but Cindy, Jason, a lot of people really deserve a lot of credit. So thank you.
Some good job. Maybe jump back real quick.
Go for it.
So I apologize. I forgot one item there on the recovery center. So as we are working on that schematic design, one of the things that the team wants to add is a secure drop-off location. And they wanted to get input from the fire and law enforcement community. So I was hoping either the people at this table or somebody that they would designate as a representative to work with our design team to make sure that what they're proposing works for your operator vehicles, your operation, how you want to get in and out of there. So I'll probably be reaching out to the representatives and
I'll purchase.
And make sure, I don't think it's a huge time dedication. There might be a couple of meetings. I know they usually offer a virtual option and Boris is going to be, they want to hear your thoughts and then they're going to want you to look at their designs as they go through and make sure that that's fitting with what you guys see.
How are we?
Okay, so I'll send out an email and connect you with the design team and they'll probably take it from there on scheduling. So.
All right, moving on to subcommittee updates. Substance Use Disorders Subcommittee, any updates? None, okay. Mental Health Services Subcommittee. Update. Communications Subcommittee. No updates, Behavioral Health Workforce Development Subcommittee. No updates, all right. Entering into public comment time, if you would like to address the committee, this is your opportunity to do so. Yes.
I just have a question for that. We're looking at this.
If you could state your name.
Looking at the list of veterans, I was pretty surprised to see a kitchen on there. So that means we're open in phase one with no commercial kitchen. Is that right? Just speak up.
So the current plan would be to not have the, they would have a warming kitchen, and we would have an outside food contractor come in. And yeah, because the cost to rehab the kitchen was not within our current budget. So that's probably our top, the betterments. There's a few like single rooms in a few of the wings that are higher than that, but that's high on the list of betterments that we would like to try to find a way to fund. Because having that partnership with Columbia Abilities Alliance and having that vocational training and stuff on site would be a big plus. So that's something we really want to see happen. But right now, it's outside the current budget.
Providing food, you know?
We would likely contract with one of the food vendors. We use a couple of different ones. Airmark is one. I'm trying to think of the other one that we use, but Southern.
Yep.
And so we would use one of those. They would deliver the meals, and there would be an on-site warming kitchen for the staff. That's currently what I believe is being discussed. So.
Any other questions? Yes.
Stephen Bell, the Franklin County Commissioner. A couple of questions. The presentation by June, can you kind of explain to me what the process of that decision-making process might look like with relationship to this group? I just don't understand how the decision-making process of this board.
Yeah, so we have entertained some of the gaps that exist within the network of services. We've sort of tabled those until we know better what the numbers are for the main thing that we're doing, which is the recovery center. And so it's, I would say as soon as we have a clear idea what those dollars look like, then we could probably entertain what other pieces that we would like to add to the services in our community. I think one of the reasons that we asked them to come do a presentation is there is a gap in services for outpatient services, particularly in our community. And so trying to address that issue, whether that's bringing options like telehealth into the community or recruiting other providers to the community, that sort of thing.
But I think to the heart of your question, I think this board, you know, can vote to make a recommendation to the commissioners.
So did this board make that decision to table that until later date?
I think it was just an informational presentation to the committee.
That part I understand, yeah. But I'm just saying you said that bringing, you know, somebody like this on board has been tabled at this point.
Correct.
This board tabled that? Was that
correct? Right? Yes, we did.
So this board decided. Okay. And then comprehensive, and they've been chosen as a service provider for the recovery center. Is this board a part of deciding what the criteria would be that they operate by? Or has that been somebody else that's made that criteria decisions?
I think it's an oversight is our role, not necessarily determining. We can make recommendations to the counties, what we think it should be, but ultimately it's the counties that hold the contract.
That part I understand. I'm just talking about the criteria with which their contract was decided. Does this board make those recommendations to the county, or is that a different
one? Yes. Yes.
So their contract that they now have.
They don't have a contract yet.
That they're working for. They've been chosen as the providers at that.
Correct. Yes.
And so did this board make that recommendation?
Yes, we did.
This board made that recommendation to the counties that they would be the contract provider. And so is this exclusively this board that makes those recommendations to the county, or is there other influence somewhere else?
It would be this board, that's our.
Okay, both county commissioners approved set positions for the advisory board as well as accepted the nomination of applied for positions to form this body. Okay, both Benton County and Franklin.
And both sides have appointed eight now? I have paid attention to that, but my understanding is eight voting members on both sides.
Correct, and one at large.
It'd be a 17-member board voting.
And so, yeah, the intent is, as we get into the contract negotiations and have that language, that that contract would come back to this body to be reviewed to ensure that the services are consistent with what we would, what the board would expect. I'm not a voting member, so what the board would expect from what they've said are important in the community, with a recommendation going back to the commissioners to enter into that contract or not, or what changes.
So the other part, clarity, so with Benton County, Franklin County calls for an RFP. This board looks at those RFPs.
This board reviewed that RFP, approved it to go out, reviewed the responses, and made that formal recommendation to award that to Comprehensive.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the community? All right, any other business?
So, Mr. Gonzalez not being here, is there any updates to the Sobering Center conversation? Thank you.
So, over on that side, people are a little confused with how the Sobering Center came about. When I say people, like city council members and commissioners. And so Commissioner Bowman, trying to understand the process, called a meeting of our board to go and explain the whole Sobering Center. But being sitting here, and so therefore, you know, what's being told to them is the Sobering Center concept, the temporary Sobering that came to be a one-year, the whole RFP thing. That's how hardly any of that's the way it worked. And then it's temporary, but it was last, when I was here voting, it was 100% of the voting members said, yeah, let's do this short one. And so that's the message that went back to the commissioner, our commissioners. Damn, we're going to fix that broke down part. And then, you know, what's happening right now is the usual, you know, the Pasco Fire Department is concerned about, you know, what happens if it catches on fire? What do you call all those things? Yeah, all these zoning things that they're going through. Lords has actually been in front of our commission, if I remember, some fashion, some thing. They're trying to explain it all. So it's progressing, but it's bogged down in quagmire politics. But that would.
Do you think it'd be possible, based on the meetings taking place in the next short period, is an update at our next meeting of potential timeline feasible? I guess what I'm trying to determine is we had really moved forward with a temporary option that was proposed by Franklin County City of Pasco. If that's not going to come to fruition, it may make sense to revisit that conversation to see if there's a stopgap until 2026.
Well, I've asked to get in front of the Pasco City Council to give them Jim Raymond's version of it all. And I say we're going to be in front of the commissioners, so I think it's 26.
Could we ask you to maybe provide an update next month on how the.
I'll give you the slide presentation.
Thanks. Sure, one of the things that we saw at the last meeting, I think you were there, but it's different numbers. We've seen different numbers a couple different times. So I think that was some of the concern, was that conceptually everybody agrees it's a good idea, we should do it. But we've seen very different budget numbers, so it would be nice to see what is in fact the budget, what is in fact the staffing plan, because we've heard a few different versions of that.
Well, I think the boards could do that.
Yeah.
That's where I think we've gotten a couple different versions.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
Well, another thing what I can say, that we submit that the final budget months ago. I submitted to Mike and Matt, so I just submitted that months ago.
Yeah, we could do that. In fact, you want to put yourself on the thing to present? Well, I hope.
I think it would be good. Yeah, I think the group would have more comfort if they.
Well, for me, the part that's frustrating. And I'm capitalizing it now, temporary, in all caps.
Yeah.
This is temporary. Stop it. And then the thing is if you have a one-stop at KGH, which appears we are going to have, then whoever is running the whole show, they're not going to fill all those positions unless they let other providers and stuff part for them to make that a reality. That's the problem, is the breakdown. Can't we all get along in the sandbox here? Doesn't matter if it's LifePoint or Cadillac or KGH Comprehensive and so on. In order to make this work, all the providers are going to have a seat at the table to make it all click. Doesn't matter who's managing it, who owns it. Without the partnerships, it's not going to become a reality unless everybody's willing to break down those barriers and say, well, let's do this, let's try this. A temporary sobering center is what it's meant to be, is what does that look like for a 23-hour drop-off evaluation center, and how does it segue to that, and will it? And if it doesn't, then Lord's is that. But if it doesn't look like that, it's only for a year. But why are we not going to look at all the expertise from all these different organizations within the Tri-Cities to make this all clear? That's why. I get that you got to have all these permits and everything, but you know, we have communities that think, well, they're going to have this influx of mentally ill, stoned people. Well, you already got them. Yeah, they ain't going anywhere. They're not, they're piled up around Our Lady of Lourdes, and whether they're there or not there with a sobering center, they still got them. They're not going. And so how do you relieve some of those pressures off experience?
Commissioner, did you have a question?
I just wanted to make a comment. I really appreciate Sheriff Raymond at our conversations over the last bit, just trying to make the communication simpler. So my hope is I'd ask him to come and those that represent Franklin County to come and kind of give us an update. And we have a mechanism in a commissioner's meeting. We have a workshop attached to our commissioner's meetings. So it is my intent to just once a month, just have a snapshot of the, so Sheriff and I can probably coordinate as far as which meeting that is, so that we can have a, if we did it maybe the week before, you guys have your regular monthly meeting or something of that nature, we'll coordinate. And I just think it would help the conversation happen smoother and keep us up to date. I had considerable frustration over the last 2 weeks trying to get information, understanding, and so we kind of work through that a little bit. And I think maybe we're on, so I just wanted to share that. And I think we have a mechanism to be easier now.
I forget what recovery coalition I'm on. Yeah, you got 509 recovery.
You get a minute change at all.
509 to something else. And this is now the behavioral recovery board, and you know, voting members and advisory members sometimes get lost.
One comment. Maybe off a different topic, but I believe that the commercial kitchen is beyond the reach of the coalition. I don't think we could ever raise the money that is.
Yeah, if you look at the betterments list, and we're trying to get some clarity on the cost, what they have in there, but they currently have a cost of $3.9 million.
We could not raise that.
So we've asked them to break that down a little bit to make sure that what they're envisioning for that is consistent with what we had envisioned and what Columbia Abilities Alliance had envisioned. Maybe that cost comes down, but it's still going to be in millions of dollars.
$650 a square foot for a renovation seems
high.
Seems quite high.
But the kitchen also is not in super great shape. But
sure.
If I give you an analogy, so the jails, our jail in particular, it needs completely renovated, as opposed to spending millions and millions in renovation. contract those services.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
There is, yeah.
Bringing food in and taking care of it and distributing versus making it, et cetera, staff and everything. For us with Summit, in the last 3 years, we brought in $1 million money back into the county, outsourcing our food services.
Yeah, so, and I could say, I mean, the number does seem, but we did just a replacement of the equipment in our kitchen, and this was in $2018, and so it's significant. It was $1.1 million just to replace the equipment, and it's a similarly sized kitchen, so.
And I think maybe some of the challenges on this one is that there's a secondary component of it. It's not just food preparation, but the vision, as it's been explored by some people in this group, is a combination of food service and also job training, right? And so that maybe changes this out of just being a financial decision, because it has some programmatic value. Is it worth, you know, Matt, you or whoever else has been part of that conversation of possibilities, maybe do a presentation in upcoming months of what that concept could look like?
Yeah, I could ask Mike to come and.
I think it'd be great. I'd love to kind of hear that vision a little more, so that it's not just looking at the economics of it, but economics plus benefit.
Well, the good is, I call it the goodwill in that group.
Right.
They do contract service throughout the county, and they bring their people in. They'd be a much more secure environment for people, wherever they do their cooking and stuff. There's ways around it.
There are.
The other side of that is, I bet you, total Tri-City, $3.9 million for a kitchen for it would take to get it.
We're having conversations with the legislature, making to see if we can ask for some additional funding for that. I really feel like the piece that you're talking about is really what's important. The cost is higher than we have in our current budget, but I think the value we get for the overall concept of the recovery center, because we're talking, Michael and I have been talking a lot about the idea, and I don't know that he has a fully fledged plan yet, but, you know, being able to bring in the training piece in the kitchen, but then that would also, they're located a block and a half away, they could add in other training parts that they do. They do janitorial, they do landscaping, they do housekeeping, and we're gonna need those kind of services within this facility, and having that ability to take people who are now through their recovery, they're in that point of stabilization, but maybe they don't have the skills to go and get a job, or they don't have it. And adding that to the life coaching and all the other things there, I think would be tremendously beneficial.
And I get that it's not a fully baked concept, but Michael presenting a half-baked concept comes across really well.
Oh, yeah, he does a great job.
That guy can sell ice in Alaska.
Right.
Do laundry service, you know?
I don't think that's one that they do, but I don't know that.
Have you looked at the laundry services inside that building?
There is, oddly enough, there is not a laundry facility in that hospital.
There's not.
There is not. We fully expected it, and they said, no, we've been sending that out for a long time. Yeah, I expected to find a huge laundry room, and nope, they have it. Their laundry room on their floor plan is literally a large closet where they rolled carts in, and that's what it was.
And big dryers, yes.
Yes, they are. We replace them in our jail all the time, and they're not cheap.
Any other business? Unless there's any objection, I suggest we adjourn.